The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, we're joined by Ciarán Pryor, who is the author of Traces of Truth, a CSI investigates life and death. CSI, American TV shows. I said the name has chosen this, but we have our own CSI in Garda Síochána, do we, that you are part of?
That's correct, Matt. Crime scene investigation has been part of Garda Síochána really for a long, long time. And with the advent of the TV shows, it really put the focus on it. So originally started with the Garda Technical Bureau in Garda headquarters, and they were the original investigators of serious crime. And it was developed onwards then until the early 2000s, when divisional crime scene investigation units were set up countrywide in response to the ever-changing society we were living in, Matt.
Rather than sending Gardaí out from Dublin to whatever part of the country needed them.
Yes, yes, yes. So basically every Garda division then got a crime scene investigation unit that was equipped, trained with the Garda Technical Bureau and the State Pathologist's Office, the Forensic Science Laboratory, and they operated covering large rural Garda country divisions. And that was where I joined as a crime scene investigator. Obviously, of course, having spent my time on frontline policing.
I imagine most people are familiar with seeing the tapes been put up to cordon off an area. Maybe if something has happened on the street or an entrance to a house or apartment block or whatever. But tell us what a crime scene investigator does. Once you have set up the perimeter or the cordon, why is that set up in the first place? And how important is it to make sure that, to use a phrase, there's no contamination of a crime scene from what has actually happened?
Yes, Matt, that is crucial. That tape plays a crucial part, and you would have heard the phrase, and your listeners would have heard the phrase, preserving the scene. So the idea is, by the time the crime scene investigators come to retrieve evidence and to examine the scene, that the scene would be in the same state as when the culprits left it. So that's the key to it. And
very difficult to achieve, though, isn't it?
Well, it is. But you know, it's part and parcel of the core tenets of it, to try and get that scene as pristine as possible, so that when a crime scene investigator arrives, they can commence their examination. And the first thing, basically, when you go into a scene, you're behind that tape, is to take no action at all. Believe it or not. That's a time when you're observing, watching, looking, and you're feeling for the nuance of the crime scene. You develop a sixth kind of sense over a period of time as to when something looks off, Matt, when something just doesn't sit right. And I suppose that's the advantage that Garda Síochána would have had in relation to crime scene investigators, that all their CSI personnel were chosen from frontline policing. So by the time you entered into crime scene investigation, you would have attended a lot of serious crime scenes, and you do develop a sixth sense and a feel
for what that scene. What particularly are you looking for?
Matt, if you go into a house and there is a body there, and you quickly get the feeling and the sense when something is off, you're looking for the sign.
Isn't the mere fact that a body is there a sign that something is off?
See, but Matt,
what beyond that?
You can go into a house and, God forbid, a man dies of a heart attack. He drops, but he splits his head on the corner of the table on the way down. So you've got a dead body. It's natural causes.
But you don't know that as yet, do you?
Exactly. And therein lies the rub, that's where the crime scene investigator comes in, reads the scene and assesses that. If something then tweaks your radar, tweaks your warning system, then, of course, you make the decision to recommend to your supervisors that the state pathologist would be called in, where a full forensic postmortem would take place. And we as crime scene investigators would attend those forensic postmortems as well.
And presumably, and this might sound very basic, and excuse me if this sounds like I've just, you know, watched too much of these procedurals on television.
At all, Matt,
but you have to get gloved, I presume.
So absolutely.
That's one of the most important things.
Absolutely.
And presumably you don't touch the body, do you? You don't start rooting around looking inside the jacket for something, or even moving the body from the position that it's in to try and find more evidence, do you?
Matt, no. The first thing is just you go in, you're suited up, you're gloved up, and you're doing nothing. You're taking it in, you're absorbing every detail, you're soaking in everything around the scene. Then you start your recording, your notebook, you have A4 notebook with you, and you start your note taking. You're noting the position, you're noting anything unusual, you're recording it then by photographing the scene. So the real core, the real thing is to hold back. And it sounds counterintuitive to just hold back, but it's crucial because you don't want to move in, you don't want to disturb, you don't want to interfere. But in a case where you might, as we have done many, many times, you get a body in a house, the circumstances are up in the air, you would get a sense going in what may have occurred. The scene kind of speaks to you after a while. Sorry, Matt, I'll just finish to explain that. And obviously then you would take a little check initially to see, was there injuries around the throat? Is there petechial hemorrhaging in the eyes? That sort of thing. So you are observing, you're looking, you're
And does the crime scene investigator speak to people at the scene of the crime, or do you leave that to other Gardaí?
Generally wouldn't, but sometimes the case is that there are family members there, Matt, and there are people there. We wouldn't take an active part in canvassing witnesses or investigation. That's left to the detectives. But oftentimes it's just the way it occurs. You would encounter family members, and that's a very difficult thing to do, because it's traumatic enough for them to see and know they've lost a loved one, but then to see,
assuming they're not a responsible person.
Yes, and suited and booted personnel arriving, you know, it's
And tell me, when you're there, have you in your experience seen terrible things? I mean, how distressing can it be to see particularly gruesome murders, or the remains of somebody who has been murdered in a particularly savage way?
Matt, it is. It's something, and you just have to, it's something that comes with exposure and experience. Before I ever went into crime scene investigation, I spent 9 years here in Dublin and was exposed to many, many murders. And yes, they're gruesome, but you know, you arrive to that scene, Matt, and once you zip up that white suit, effectively you've got to zip up your emotions, your feelings inside it, because your duty is to the deceased that's there. Your duty is to the family, and it's just not conducive to their needs to be emotional or getting upset. But It's something that it does sit with you. It's inside. You wouldn't be human, Matt, unless it didn't leave a mark on you, you know.
And so, then when you do the examinations and whatever, do you leave it to the pathologist who'd be making a decision as to the cause of death? But are you looking for things like fingerprints, DNA from hair samples?
Yes,
you know, again, the
yes,
type of stuff we
yes,
see on television
yes, Matt,
procedurals.
And the thing with TV, Matt, It represents it in a kind of fast forward version, in that you've got everything packaged in the 40 minutes, whereas in reality you could be a day or 2 days processing a scene. Normally you would go to a scene, your body is there, the deceased is there, you would carry out preliminary examination. Sometimes the state pathologist would attend at the scene, the body would be removed to the mortuary, and the scene would be preserved pending the results of the state pathologist's examination. We would accompany the state pathologist, and did on so many occasions. And our function and role at the post-mortem is to record it, photograph it, take the evidential samples as the pathologist does the examination. So there's a whole process to it, Matt. And if it's declared a murder, well, then we're back to the scene to carry out a full examination. Obviously, with the key core tenet of keeping free from contamination, because you're moving around, you know.
And then the importance of taking accurate notes, because presumably you've had to go to trial many times, have you, to give evidence in relation to what you found?
Absolutely, Matt. And it's something that has stood me well down through the years. Note taking, very early on in my service, I attended at trials and saw how a senior counsel can very easily tear a witness to shreds, especially any sort of a witness who would be expected to be taken to notes, both guards, pathologists, doctors, you have got to be able to stand over your notes. So it's crucial, Matt. And we as crime scene investigators, I used to have an A4 notebook, and you would literally write pages and pages of notes. And many's the time that they saved the day.
So can you talk about the most high profile cases you've been involved in?
Well, Matt, you know, there've been many high profile cases, and I was asked this question a number of times, and to me, every single case is a high profile case. When there's a loss of life through violence, it is just as high profile to that family and that victim's family as the ones that happen to make the national media. For some reason, some cases make that national media, and be it the courtroom drama that pays out, it just depends from case to case.
You're retired now.
Retired, Matt.
Since
yes.
When?
Since 22, October 22.
Does that mean, did you have to attend the scene when your friend Colm Horcan was killed?
Colm, would you believe, when Colm was shot dead, I was actually down on holidays in Silver Strand, but my colleague Mark and Ray were down at the scene, and that was, you know, that's crime scene investigation at its most difficult, to go down there and look at a good friend, a good colleague, and see him lying there, but still have to pull it together, get on that white suit. And that's where the strength, the resilience, and the uniqueness of a crime scene investigator. And no better example could it be than the one you've chosen, as when Colm was murdered. The lads were down there doing their duty and just had to button it up. And the priority was to process that scene, you know.
Now that you're retired, is this a job you miss?
Matt, I enjoyed it when I was doing it. Absolutely, I've no regrets about the time I spent there, but I don't miss it. I've given my time to it. I enjoyed it when I was at it. And, you know, I nearly describe it as a sort of blue sky thinking type of scene that I have now. Before, we were going to work in the morning and you would get the list and the litany of stuff that had gone wrong during the night, be it assaults, break-ins. Obviously, not every day was going to be a murder day.
But you'd be doing other things, like just simple things,
sure,
like an assault scene,
sure,
or a break-in in a house or whatever.
Absolutely. That was the bread and butter.
You weren't sitting like waiting in the barracks for the next murder to happen.
But believe it or not, and one of the most fascinating cases, say, I was involved, I was actually in at the National Museum there a week or so ago. It was, again, related to death, where 4,000 years ago, there was a votive ritual made in a bog outside Strokestown, where a priceless gold lunula and two gold discs were deposited in the turf. Roll on 4,047 years, and a man was cutting turf down in the bog in Strokestown, and he discovered this glint of gold. Out comes the gold lunula and two discs, priceless artifacts. Not sure what to do with them, he handed them in to the local pharmacist who put them in his safe. Roll on another 62 years, and I was called out to a break-in at the pharmacy, where the culprits put in the wooden door, smashed it, splintered it, raided the drugs cabinet, the perfumes for the black market, etc., and made good their escape. I was called out to examine for fingerprints. The owner came to me and said she thought that something priceless may be missing. And it turned out that this gold lunula and two discs, the most unique find, was missing with the contents of the safe. The culprits made their way back to Dublin, where they promptly deposited the safe into the Royal Canal, took out the documentation from the safe, took a quick look and decided there was nothing of value in it, and threw it in a skip. The pressure was on me, Matt. I was called out. I was down on my hands and knees trying to get some snippet when it was found out, obviously, that this stuff was priceless, more than the value of every pharmacy raid that had ever taken place, probably in Europe. The pressure was on. Eventually, I managed to get a fingerprint, got it rushed to Dublin, got a hit on it. The thieves woke the next morning to the sound of their own door splintering, recovered the perfume, the jewellery, and when asked about the priceless artefacts, they were clueless. But they did own up and show the skips where they had deposited the paperwork. Cue the skips being removed to Kilmainham Garda Station, a day spent searching, and for the second time over 4,000 and 62 years, the Lunala and gold disc made it. So look, it's not all murder, it's not all mayhem. There are
well, thank God they didn't go to landfill.
Well, landfill, Matt, but they're there in the National Museum known as the Cogglebeg Hoard, and it's a fascinating story of crime scene investigation, and it's recounted in one of the chapters.
Traces of Truth, a CSI investigates life and death. Kieran Pryor, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.